I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. I'm joined with Robin.
Good evening.
Matt, and we're talking everything Bills with a UK twist. And I think, what, is that 3-0 in the last two seasons against the Patriots?
Yeah, 3-0 against the Patriots. 3-0 on Thursday games, a stat no one cares about, but apparently we happen to have learned. The only team to ever go 3-0 in a Thursday games, because it happens so rarely.
And also, all those three games, correct me if I'm wrong, we're away from home as well, those Thursday night games.
Yes. Yes. Rams, Lions, and Patriots on Thursday. Yeah. No,
so you're another record in the books.
Yeah.
Two records in the book.
Yeah.
And also three wins away from home in 12 days.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, it looks a damn sight better 9-3 than 6-3 when the skies were caving in for some people, and this was I think all the depressive drought people started here we go again, morose talk. But you look at us now, 9-3. You look at the stretch. We always remember what John Madden said about all the best football, all the most important football played after Thanksgiving and in December. And with five games to go, the Bills are well placed. We're recording this on Saturday, so before the Sunday games, but with some fascinating games coming up Sunday, the Bills are going to be right there for the number one seed.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, we've put ourselves in a good position. We'll come on to the Patriots game in a minute. We've put ourselves in a good position, obviously, with the Dolphins having San Francisco.
Yep.
And the Chiefs getting the got the Bengals. If they both lose,
yes,
we jump from fifth seed to number one seed.
Yeah, which just goes to show that top six or seven seeds in the AFC is pretty close, because you've now got the Bengals on seven wins, you've got the Titans on seven wins, and the Ravens are right there as well, haven't you? It's pretty much between those seven. You can't. Probably won't see too many teams breaking into that seven, but there's only a couple of wins from one to seven, isn't there?
And in essence, if those results do happen, then the Bills have got that number one seed back in their own destiny again.
Exactly.
And I say we'll discuss it game by game when it comes to it, but we haven't got the most easiest of schedules.
Jets,
Dolphins, Bears, okay.
Yeah,
Bengals, Patriots.
Yeah, there's two ways you can look at it. We've got five games left. Three of them are at home. We've still only played four games really at home. Five, like technically, we're always going to play eight home games, which is sort of become seven because of the moved Browns game because of the snow. You can say that the Jets are a decent team. Dolphins are obviously a very good team, but we are playing them at home. So that kind of balances it. The one that does give me pause is the Bengals on the road. I can't see us having a problem at home to the Patriots or even on the road to the Bears. I think we should have enough. The Bears aren't terrible, but I think we should be okay. The one with the Bengals is interesting, because the Bengals, in a funny way, could almost be the kingmaker or the decider, couldn't they? Because if they lose both to the Bills and the Chiefs, they're sort of hanging on to a wild card spot. If they win one and lose one, the team that they lose to may very well end up being the number one seed. And of course, if they win both, they're still in the conversation for a number one seed themselves.
Yeah.
So
I think everyone's going to be praying that San Fran and the Bengals do win.
Yeah, on Bill's side. Anyway.
And I say it'll be in our own hands. And
yes,
we took care of the part one of the AFC East trilogy.
Yes,
when we actually went to Gillette, and I don't know if you actually saw or even read what Josh said after.
something to do with how he advertises Gillette on TV. Something about
yeah,
that.
And that was just that. It was brazen of him to actually say, okay, there was barely any, all the Patriots fans left probably about halfway through the third quarter and all that. But it just shows that he's really coming into his own, enjoying the spotlight, enjoying the roast. And in essence, what they managed to do against the Patriots this time was what we did last year against them. Although, unfortunately, we had to punt three times, which was the only downside to the game. The only thing you can get disappointed about on beating the Patriots 24-10 at Gillette Stadium is the fact that we had to punt three times.
Yeah, and Sam Martin might possibly have injured his leg, mightn't he, on one of the kicks and one of the special teams guys from the Patriots ran into him. So hopefully he's not too serious. Yeah, it wasn't quite the 47-17 wildcard game, but then it wasn't a playoff game. The Bills just had to go in and get the win and hopefully do it in as tidy a way as possible. You can see the difference with what 7 days of practice can do. No more short weeks, no more emergency moves, no more fans, you know, rallying around to dig guys out of the driveways and get them to the airport. You can see what a week's worth of practice and a few guys coming back to the team makes the difference, because this was not a close game. The Patriots had that one terrific touchdown run, which was like a gadget free play, a bit like a fake. It was like a fake punt or a kind of wildcat type play, and you know, fair play, you know, good bit of thinking there. But this wasn't even a close game. We always say it, the Patriots are always very well coached. They don't beat themselves. They don't make stupid mistakes. They're always good on the fundamentals, but they're not a good team. They can beat bad teams and as well they might. But they just don't have any players. They just don't have anyone who can reach them. And I'm sure we'll get to all of the stats, and it depends which your favourite one is. When it comes to the Patriots, they had 9 possessions, four 3-and-outs, a 4-and-out, and a 7-and-out from their nine possessions, and they had a missed field goal, a field goal, and that one touchdown.
Yeah, I think it shows it's a well-rounded game. I mean, we can talk both on. I don't know where you want to start, if you want to go offensive side or...
let's do offensive side.
But, I mean, the one thing I like about this offense is that we're now starting. I think now Dorsey's got it into him to actually start being a bit more balanced, because the last few games, we've sort of gradually caught up on that run game.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we're starting to become more balanced game by game. And I say it could be just down to who they're facing and who they're not, to what direction's going. But for the first time, you're kind of seeing what this team can do. And don't forget, we were missing Deion Dawkins.
Yeah, which was a loss.
And we had David Quisenberry. I'll give him credit. You go down the first play of the ankle, have it triple, quadruple taped, still go out there because you know that you've got Bobby Hart as your backup corner, as your backup tackle to go in there. And the fact that you've done that and you've got an offense that hadn't been firing more recently, but again, against a second-ranked or against a really good ranked, top 10-ranked Patriots defense, they were 3-for-3 in the red zone. And we know how bad our red zone offense has been recently.
Yeah.
We've got 115 yards from the running backs. Controlled that ball well. I think, what was it? We were... what was the stats on their possession wise? I think we outdone them nearly twice.
It was almost 2-1, wasn't it?
Yeah. And the fact that you've got a conversion rate on third down, 9-of-15, so 60% conversion rate.
Yeah. Oh, you've gone.
And it's just seeing you're starting to build up a lot more on there, and we're seeing a lot more different personnel, different plays. But you still have a thing where you think there could be something that needs to improve that's still stuck in the loop, so to speak.
Yes. Well, you look at the breakdown. This would be interesting. So 70 offensive snaps, 37 rushes, 33 passes attempted in the game.
Yeah.
Now, leaving aside that ghastly Patriots game that we played at home, where we may well have rushed more than we passed, just because it was just that sort of game, and passes were at a premium. There's probably not that many Bills games where that's the case. We almost always will be. And actually, if you go back and look, even sort of 3 weeks ago, we were, 60%, 40% pass. This has just edged it 52-48, something like that, of rush to pass instead. I think what it's actually showing, whether it's Ken Dorsey getting it or whether it's the scheme finally paying off with all the practice, and perhaps they weren't able to practice over the past few weeks, but you're starting to see the sort of running backs and the O-line meshing cohesion between the two things. Cover one, as always, have fantastic coverage, and they were looking at the run game concepts, and they were saying, well, they've probably got like four main base concepts that they're using on the running game now that now actually seem to be paying off. And you look at for the first time in ages, the first time ever, I think, this season, James Cook is the lead rusher, or was the lead rusher. 14 rushes for 64, Singletary 13 rushes for 51. Not a huge difference in the carries, but slight difference there in the yards. And basically what that's doing is it's leaving very, very manageable third downs for Dorsey and Josh Allen to do, because it's a damn sight easier to make a conversion on third and three and third and two, knowing you can run it, because they have to respect the run game, and it's given him so much more, so much more time to find the McKenzies and the Davises and the Diggs on those third down conversions. And so, as well as giving the offense more balance, it's also giving the pass game a little bit more breathing room, because then Josh isn't having to put that on his back. He isn't having to scramble more. I mean, he isn't having to play that hero ball.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. I mean, are we kind of seeing, I don't see, go back and have a look at previous games on there and previous snap count. Are we seeing more of the Bills turning to James Cook now as their starting running back? Because the snap count from the Patriots game had Singletary in for 33 of the 75 offensive snaps, James Cook in for 32 of the 47. For 75. Yeah. So
yeah,
we're seeing Cook start to become more and more involved.
Mm-hmm.
Are we thinking and looking that obviously Singletary's had his run, it's his contract year, let's see now what we can do with James Cook, knowing that Cook is out of both of them is the better in the pass catching department. And we've seen that Cook can actually go in between the tackles and actually make some good yards. I mean, he was averaging four or five yards per carry for his 64 yards, where Singletary, he's only best, or he seems to be best at the moment, when he's playing more outside. We go to try to go out rather than in. So are we seeing now a shift more towards James Cook become the de facto number one?
I think the front office would probably prefer that, because we've always spoken about this all the way through this season about, do they work better having two functional running backs, each having with a different kind of skill set, some perhaps inside the tackle, some outside the tackle, some pure power, some pure speed. Or are we looking at, let's come out and say it, are we looking at Singletary's replacement? The James Cook will basically replace Singletary at the end of the year. They're not going to pay him. I've never thought that they would, and that's nothing bad said about Singletary, who's been terrific.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you just don't tend to pay running backs when you can get a new one every 5 years. If it's not Christian McCaffrey, you probably wouldn't, would you?
Well, there was it. I'm going to search through my... through the notification on Twitter. It's like someone, I think I was having a chat with one of the guys about Singletary. Let's see where's it gone. Let's just choose that one, because that's a link to it. There we go. So obviously him being, we know Singletary's good, and I think he's what, averaging like 4.8 yards per attempt. So mm-hmm. not the home hitting yardage, but obviously getting there is actually to make it more manageable.
Yeah,
for like third down or second down conversions. And he said maybe he's now, they're starting to move more towards Cook than Singletary.
Yeah.
Potentially not really showcase Singletary, but to maybe try and keep him on the cheap for next year and contract wise. Because okay. if you look at all the running backs that are going to be out of
it's a long list, isn't it?
You got Jacobs? Let's have a look. We got Jacobs, obviously Singletary. You've got, I'm going to bring it up in a minute. Maybe I should have done this before I actually came on.
No, you're making a valid point. I mean, what you're talking about, I think, is it advantageous or welcome even for the Bills to perhaps offer a Singletary a kind of reduced team-friendly deal? Don't pay him,
yeah,
quote unquote, but bring him back on a sort of cheapish deal. I don't know, $5 million or something, $6-8 million if they can afford it. You've still got Cook on a rookie contract, and go with two running backs. Or is that really an investment that they want to make, given that there are other running backs that are out there?
Yeah, and also another way to do it, obviously, it's going to be a difficult market for Singletary.
Yes.
This kind of thing. Because, say, you've got Saquon Barkley, Kareem Hunt, Rashad Penny, Jamal Williams of Detroit, not the rookie, Josh Jacobs, Mark Ingram, possibly, pass him up there, Raheem Mostert, Sammy Perine, Ronald Jones, Miles Sanders, just to name a few, Kenyon Drake, David Montgomery, Tony Pollard, you've got all those. So maybe it is a plan, or maybe it is a case that we will see Singletary back on the team friendly. And that would be, in my opinion, a good thing, because they both have the skill set which mesh with each other and actually are quite good.
Yes, you made the option 3 point there, which I didn't get to, which was very good, which is, you offer the team-friendly deal precisely because there are, frankly, probably better running backs that other teams would want to pursue in the off-season. And the second point to that is, it's probably too much to expect James Cook to be the only main running back on the team. Mm. Maybe they found a formula by which we can use two running backs, making up more or less 25% of the total carries, making more or less 50% of the offense, and you let Josh handle the other half. And if that's attractive to Singletary, you usually get, you know, championship discounts, don't you? If the Bills are an annual, you know, championship chasing team, it's often a lot easier to get them to come back for more money. The culture's great. You know, if he likes being here, then take a bit less money. Yeah, that's a valid point of view. I had always maintained that it seemed to make more sense to do a one-for-one, given the salary cap constraints that they're battling under, knowing they really have to pay Ed Oliver and Tremaine in the off-season, possibly meaning they'll have to let Poyer go. Is that a luxury they can afford to splash out on when it comes to paying Singletary? But yeah, if they can get him back at the right thing, and I'm sure Brandon Bean will do one of those prorated signing bonus appearance training camp bonus things that basically means you could sign him for $250, but somehow he gets he gets rich. If they can make that deal work, then we seem to maybe have turned that corner of what we were all talking about, is getting a balanced rushing pass attack. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, just before we go on to just another part of the offense, is another thing about how we've seen a balance in this in the offensive philosophy. The Bills against the Patriots used their heavy formations, the jumbos, so the extra
Yes.
linemen. I'm in there. 22% of their rush plays, excluding the three kneel downs by Josh.
Yeah.
On 29 carries in there, they got 112 yards.
Okay.
And this is against a Patriots team that's only given up like 100 and what I say on the preview show, about 106, 108 yards
So did
per
you say
game.
that they used a jumbo on 29 of their runs?
29 carries.
29 carries, because that's out of 37 as well. So that's pretty, that's 80 or so percent, isn't it?
Yes,
85
well,
percent.
22% of their non-kneel down plays,
Yeah.
they actually ran. They ran it. So they had 75, obviously, offensive plays altogether. So we'll work it,
Interesting.
wherever
Okay.
that,
Yeah,
wherever this works
but
out. But
a pretty substantial contingent of their running attack seems to be based around the jumbo formation.
yeah,
Brilliant.
and Ken Dorsey, especially for the Patriots game, start to use more of Cook and Hines on the same on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
That if they could do that with if Singletary could gain could actually improve his pass catching, even having him and Cook out there would actually open up this offense a lot more. Because when those both Hines and Cook were on there at the same
Yeah.
time, they gained on 12 of those plays. They gained, well, the 12 times they were on there, gained 78 yards for an average of 6.5 yards each play.
Yes.
When they weren't on there, they only averaged 4.6. So you're seeing a philosophy now of them, A, going balanced, but getting a different personnel in to keep that defense guessing. And hopefully now with the mini bye we have
Yeah.
this week, we can get see that a lot more, and they can divert that a lot more.
Yeah. No, that's a that's a really good point. One of the things I noticed, or I say I noticed, I was reading that someone else had noticed, was the amount of 10 personnel that they used in the passing game as well. So they just had one. They just emptied it out apart from the running back. Didn't even play with tight ends and just played with a larger number of wide receivers. So I think John Brown was actually on the field, wasn't he, a couple of times?
Yeah, he had about, he was on the field for 12 snaps.
Yeah. So they did that a few times as well. So it's interesting that they're changing, because the amount of times they play with 12 was that almost their go-to one when they were passing. But interesting using 10 personnel as well, to your point that they're using different formations. That they seem to have narrowed down those concepts to the ones that work, and they've got now got a couple of formations that they think they can use to adapt it. It's almost like they've got the blueprint now as they come into the most important part of the season of who they are, what they can do, and it's you've got that parity between the pass and the rush as well.
Yeah, and the one thing that would make that work is obviously this offensive line. And obviously we were talking about Quisenberry
Yeah.
being injured, and obviously Bobby Hart on there. We now can see how important Deion Dawkins is for this team. I mean, Mitch Morse was injured last week, came back, played a whole 100%. Everyone, so Morse, Saffold, Brown, and Bates played 100% of the snaps. Obviously,
Yeah.
Quisenberry played 92% of the snaps. And this is coming up against, to say, a stout defense who
Oh, yeah.
had the league's sack leader in Matthew Judon
Yeah.
in there, and he only had one quarterback hit at all time. And this is probably going to be the concern in the off season, is that depth on that offensive line, because we see it. We've seen the four already out there, and Deion Dawkins, they're your five set in stone. After
Yeah.
that, you've got Quisenberry, who holds his own when he's not injured. Then
Yeah.
you've got Bobby Hart. Then you've
Yes.
got Justin Murray.
Van Roten.
Not good to come back. He's injured. Don't know how long it'll take for him to fully get back to what he is. But you just got a bit of depth there that's kind of worrying, especially when you've got a Jets team that likes to, that has actually got a stout defensive line.
Yeah.
You got a Dolphins team that's got a stout defensive line and Bengals that can do it. And they only rush three at a time.
Yeah. Bengals very strong. Yeah.
So that's the one area of concern, but that's an area that we need to be more consistent on. And if we can keep all five, including Dawkins, out for the majority, for the rest of the season without injuries, then you've really got, you've got that basis, you've got that offensive line that can open up and really hammer home what we've actually what we're trying to do.
Yeah, it's that mini bye. This mini bye has come up at a good time, hasn't it? Because we could really use Dawkins coming back for the Jets game, and certainly no later than the Dolphins game. I think if he's perhaps not quite ready, he's got a good shot, you'd think, with 10 days, if it's nothing too serious, that he can be back for the Jets game. But yeah, that he's going to be missed if you're having to play the Questenberry, who, all credit to him, I won't say a bad word about the commitment that he's shown, you know, playing half a leg, basically, that he was during the game. But the reality is he's just not quite as good, and there's a reason he's not in that starting lineup. You do worry a little bit. You've got Saffold, who's pretty good, but I think he's only there, I think, for this year as well, isn't it? I'm still not completely sold on Spencer Brown either as a right tackle. He's been a little inconsistent. Bates and Morse seem good. They're good, more than good, solid pieces. So in the end of the season, you got to think about drafting a guard. We have to figure out what we're doing with Spencer Brown as well. But yeah, you do worry if anything happens to the lead five, you do start to see something of a drop off.
Yeah. Well, let's switch. Let's go to the side of the ball which has its fair share of injuries, and obviously we're now out Von Miller for the next four games. It's the defense.
Yeah.
And for what they actually did, and you can see how depth works there.
Yeah.
Because the Patriots only gained 60 yards rushing, obviously 182 passing, but take out about 48 of those yards for that touchdown. And really, you've got a defense that really held.
Oh yeah.
This offense, who put up what did Mac Jones put up, about 300 or 350 on the Vikings?
Yeah.
The previous week, and yet you've held him to less than 200 yards, and that's without obviously Benford, who's on IR, and for some reason a healthy scratch in Kyrie Lamb.
There's been a few things about Kyrie Lamb, isn't there? The rumor that I would give the most credibility to is that he was injured. They said he was a full participant, and then he's suddenly a healthy scratch. The worry is that he'd either re-aggravated an injury, or perhaps had picked up a new injury, and for whatever reason they couldn't announce the injury, because you literally have to say, don't you? You have to say what the designation is, or whether someone is out or not. And for some reason, maybe they didn't file the paperwork or they didn't put it in. So essentially, he was injured rather than them dropping him. But it's just they couldn't admit that in public, because you're going to incur a fine and it's going to give you grief that's there. And you hope he's going to be coming back. But yeah, to your point about the Patriots, I mean, I ran through all the stats. I mean, they had nine possessions and six of them were punts. One of them was a missed field goal that I still kind of think was a field goal, but somehow wasn't. Just hit that crossbar. They had the one, you know, fantastic, great touchdown, nice play, nice bit of work. Bills maybe should have spotted that, but hey, you give them one. And one of the field goal. And they just weren't able to move the ball. I think mainly because if you can stop the run, Bills were very good at stopping the run. Again, we've been saying it all year. Daquan Jones, Tim Settle, Ed Oliver, you know, fantastic at stopping the run. It then means that Mac Jones is then going to have to throw. And with our man Trey playing, what was it? It was over 60%, wasn't he?
Yeah, 61%.
quite a jump, and in a week, that's pretty strong. So you give him another 10 days, one would almost expect him to almost be the you know, close to 100% of snaps next time he's, you know, Trey's back for the Jets game. It's at home. His return, playing 100%. If Elam's okay and he can come back, that's going to be good because, Dane Jackson's been a little picked on. He's been a great trooper for us, but I think his limitations have probably been for his long term career have probably been fatally exposed. I think,
and you can see that in the snap count. So obviously, White plays 61% of it. Xavier Rhodes played 87% of the snap count. So 54 defensive snaps they had, he played 47.
Yeah.
Dane Jackson, he played 28. And the most common pairing in that game was Rhodes and White.
Interesting.
Sean McDermott was asked why Elam was inactive. So they want to see what they got in Xavier Rhodes. Yeah, he's lost a step a bit in speed wise.
Yeah.
But you've got someone that can come in and, yeah, they were playing the Patriots who had Tyquan Thornton, their leading receiver. But then you have, and even with Jacoby Myers, Agron Lahore, Devontae Parker, Kendrick Bourne, and all that, those two veterans really shored up that defensive side.
Yeah.
And maybe it is a case that Elam was injured, or, and this is what I'm going to go about on the when we get to the defensive line, that they're trying to scheme it a lot more, that they know how, or try to scheme it to the strength of the opposition, which for the Patriots is the run game.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how much Rhodes is actually good in the actual run game, but maybe he's just had a little bit more experience. Obviously, had that little bit more experience over Elam in the run game that they feel with White, a stout run defender, run cornerback, Rhodes, and obviously, with Poyer and Hamlin, that you try and give away that game and then force Mac to go one dimensional. Yeah. And we all saw his flare up, and his temper tantrum.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, to further ball because the run game's not working. And the fact that the Bills, for all of their plays and for the fifth time this season, were in the nickel. So the five defensive backs pretty much for the whole game and for the fifth straight game, and were in zone coverage for 92% of all Mac Jones's dropbacks. Probably another reason why Rhodes was in over Elam.
Yeah, do you think that, you know, do you think it's again, I did mention the injury, but I suppose the other theory that was said that he's more of a man-to-man corner, Elam, and he's still learning zone. He's a rookie. I always give rookies a pass, you know, first year.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. But he's still learning the zone. He's good at man-to-man, and they'll maybe have him for that, but they knew they were going to play a zone defense against Mac Jones, so they maybe thought, don't worry about it.
It's possible.
Rhodes is a better fit.
It's possible. I mean, if Elam is another inactive, say, in the next couple of weeks, and they start playing more zone than they do man on there, then maybe that is the reason why they've actually got Elam on the bench to help him learn a bit more on zone coverage so they can actually play it.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had Poyer and Hamlin behind him. Now I think Hamlin is an heir apparent to Poyer if they don't sign him. And Poyer should have had that interception. I don't know how he actually called that back. And the Eli and Hamlin, he did whiff on the tackle a little bit for the Patriots touchdown, but the one thing I was actually annoyed about was that his ejection for that defensive receiver.
It seemed a little harsh, didn't it? It didn't seem like an obviously dirty challenge. I get why they may have thrown a flag, because let's be honest, Bills have got away with a couple of flags. I'm not going to complain about flags because we've had at least four or five off the top of my head that have gone our way. So I'm not going to complain one that doesn't. I wouldn't have objected to the flag. That seemed like, okay, I can see why you gave that. But the ejection seemed awfully harsh to me. Sometimes they do the warning, don't they? They do say, if you do that again, okay. I can see that for a defenseless player. It's one of those calls that they always have the point of emphasis for, don't they? But the trouble is, yeah, it seemed harsh to eject him for a one and done.
Trouble is, was he a defenseless receiver? He had the ball. He had the ball knocked out of him as the contact was being made by Hamlin. But
yeah.
That happens in the open field sometimes, where he's got the ball, where people, once he's got the ball, actually lose it, and then it comes in.
Yeah, bang, bang, play, isn't it?
And that's not 100% called all the time.
No, it's not.
Only the officials can really discuss and talk about that.
Yeah, maybe we were here all day talking about the interception as well, wouldn't he? I mean, he seemed to do everything right. He had 2 feet in. He went to the ground. He tucked it. As well as he was going, I don't think the ball actually touched the ground. I think the most that you could say about it was that there was a bobble. I think that was about it, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, and that's pretty much. If we go on to defensive line, what I said earlier about obviously the way they want to try and stop the run. I'm going back to the snap count, and everyone that needs to follow Sal Capaccio on things. He puts these up every single week. The fact that both Rousseau and Lawson were the two main defensive ends for this game, and both of them are known for their run stopping ability. So as much as we're going to miss the pass rush ability of Von Miller, you still have Rousseau, who can get to the par, who can rush, and it's developing quite well under Von Miller's tutelage. But you've got two guys that can set the edge and set the run game, and then you have Oliver and Jones, run stopping guys that can actually get up the middle. So you kind of look and see how this defense is actually schemed.
Yeah, that's absolutely as it should be. The only thing, and I think I don't really have too much to add. I think you actually summarized it perfectly. The only thing we then have left is the closer, and we just need him back for the playoffs, because that'll be enough, perhaps even including the Bengals for the rest of the regular season. But we might just need that little something extra for the playoffs.
And also, this is the first game for Rousseau back since his ankle injury. And we know on this defensive line, the Bills like to freshen it up and rotate it.
Yes.
The first 29 snaps of the 53 defensive snaps, Rousseau was in for 93.1% and Lawson 89.7%.
Yeah.
And they still managed to, even though they're in it for a run and we didn't have a closer that Von Miller did, they still had enough in them to actually get some near sacks, force Mac Jones out the pocket and actually throw balls away, do very bad plays, force multiple three and outs, and even have Patriots fans to boo their offense off the field, especially towards that end of the third quarter, fourth quarter, and obviously for Mac Jones to have that temper tantrum. I can't say that word to save my life. So it's good to see that, yes, we're going to miss the closing ability of Von Miller and the finishing, because he leads the Bills with, 8-9 sacks on there. But you've also got a nice, well-rounded defensive line and defensive ends that have learnt that bring their own unique skill set against the run, and still can get that pressure, even if they don't finish it. Just the pressure and forcing that quarterback to make a mistake is, in my opinion, a little bit more better than actually getting the sack. Because you can get the pressure, give a sack, they lose, what, 7 yards, let's say, on there, they could easily get that back on the next play with a throw. But you keep the pressure on and force them to go incomplete and all that. They're still, there's more statistically, more of a chance of going three and out, forcing an incompletion, than it is with a sack.
Yes.
Especially when you're the Bills offense that like to give up your third and 15 plus yards.
Yes.
That's
still annoying as hell, isn't it? That they still keep doing that. My heart almost sinks at third and 15 because the double, because we know how many bad times it's gone against us. So you hope they can get something on that. But I guess it can't all go our way, can it? So
100% not. And I think it shows that with that they've now molded this defense with the injuries that have actually done to still become a dominant unit, even if they do miss a specific player like a Von Miller, like a Tremaine Edmonds when he's been out. They didn't lose games that badly. We saw an effect of it, but they still managed to keep away, to keep it close and record the odd wins. The fact they've built this, now they just need to do what they've done with the blueprint on depth and all that for the defensive side. And it helps that your defensive coordinator and your head coach are both defensive minded players. They know what they want, to bring that now onto the offense and start building that package like they started when Josh Allen came.
Yeah.
Build that package to help him and actually evolve this offense a lot more compared to when you see plays made by other teams.
Yeah, it's getting that bit of variety now. Hopefully, we've nailed down like the run concepts, and hopefully we've taken that workload off Josh and got it to 50-50. Now it'd be interesting to get those McKenzie. Those are some nice throws to McKenzie and those underneaths. And see if you can bring Shakir in and Davis had a couple. And we haven't mentioned him all show, but can we have a bit of Dawson Knox, please? Because blocking seems to be great for, but you don't pay $14 million for a guy to block for you. I'll block for you for that much money. You may want to bring him in. Maybe maybe he's not quite himself, or maybe they're just Dorsey's just saying, all right, look, can you block for us for a few games to we can figure out this run game, figure out the pass game. Now we've got the balance. We've now got a potential option B now with McKenzie, Shakir and Knox. Diggs and Davis, keep doing what you're doing. Davis, make a few more catches, and then let's bring in the sort of 2B part of the offense.
Yeah, and that's something that definitely going to look at during the offseason and all that, and we'll come to that. But before we sign off, is there anything else you want to mention before we wrap up our review of our first AFC East win?
First AFC East win, and hopefully with another one to come. Guys, just stay in, be boring this weekend. Don't do anything I wouldn't, which is virtually nothing these days. Have a nice week, practice, get good. We've got the Jets at home, and then we've got the Dolphins at home. Let's get two more wins. Let's just keep doing it. Fascinating weekend coming up. I think the off Bills, but I think that Miami 49ers game is going to be really interesting, because if Miami wins in San Francisco, could happen. I think San Francisco will win, but it could happen. The Dolphins are absolutely for real and we should be scared. If it's a narrow win for the 49ers, again, they're still a good team, and hey, a lot of teams are going to get beat in San Francisco. San Francisco win by 10 or 14, then the Dolphins are still a year away from being a proper playoff team. They've just strung some good wins together. So I think that will tell us an awful lot. And again, Chiefs Bengals going to be a cracker as well. So I can't wait for both.
Yeah. So the last thing I'm going to say is obviously enjoy Red Zone, everyone. Enjoy a weekend without the Bills, given an extra week. Don't forget to keep following us on all the socials. You know Robbins, you know Mines, you know Marks. You know where to find us. Just keep following, subscribing, and actually promoting us. And all I can say is for Robin, I'm Matt saying good morning, good afternoon. Thank you for listening. And let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
Yeah, no, not us. You don't know anything about Mark. You don't know anything about work.
No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three.